Welcome, everybody, to the Competition Archery Media Podcast, where we explore all things pertaining to competition archery. I'm your host, PJ Riley, and the CAM Podcast is brought to you by our fine platinum sponsors, Trueball Excel, Matthews, PSE, Black Eagle, Elite, B3 Archery, and Victory Archery. And today, we have a super guest, 2021 Paralympic Games gold medalist Kevin Mather. Kevin, thanks for being here.
Hey, it's great being here. Thanks for having me, PJ.
How does that title feel, hearing your name at the end of that?
I don't know. It's just kind of settling in still, I suppose. I was actually out to dinner last night with a friend, and just some random people are like, "Oh, congratulations on the gold medal. We're so proud of you," all that. And I'm like, just complete strangers, you know, not people I've seen in the archery shop or anything like that before. And I was like, awesome. My friend's like, "What was that?" I'm like, I guess I'm famous a little bit at least. So
that's awesome.
But yeah, it's, you know, that was the whole goal. And so it's good when it works out.
Yeah. Well, I'm like that kid at Christmas who always opens the big present first. So, Kevin, I want to see that gold medal.
Oh, geez. 1 second. I'll be right back. Right around the corner. It's always, you know, I've held it a lot now, but it's always impressive, the weight of it. Very shiny.
Yeah. And it does have some heft to it.
Oh, yeah, it's 1.2 pounds.
No kidding. Jeez.
Right, we've got some Braille on here. It says, I've had a blind athlete read it for me. It says Tokyo 2020 in the Braille. Right, with the Paralympic logo on this side. And then underneath, I don't know if I can get a clear shot of that for you there, but it says, yeah, so it says Archery Men's Individual Recurve Open, which is the division I shoot, which a lot of news outlets, or, you know, at least articles, are saying I shoot W2.
Yeah, I saw.
Not my division. It's Recurve Open. We do not have separate divisions for different disabilities or things like that in archery. You either shoot open, you know, the only one we do have that's that is W1, which, you know, here we have Leah Coriel shoots in that division. And but I shoot, I mean, if you watch the matches, right, I'm shooting mostly against people who are standing athletes, you know, like in the States here, you know, people know that Timothy Palumbo, Michael Lukow, and Eric Bennett, you know, I compete against all those guys who are, you know, standing athletes. So the W2 classification is a wheelchair user. So, that would mean if it was a W2 category, I would be against all wheelchair users. So, you know, some confusion, some more nuances in the para archery world, but yeah, I'm here to hopefully help clear it up for some folks.
I did see, I was reading an article this morning. I saw that W2 and I thought it was the open that he shot in, but yeah. And like you said, the other, the guy from China, he was standing. So, and that's all I've seen so far is just, we were just talking, the final end of your gold medal match is available on YouTube. NBC posted it up there, and it's got tens of thousands of view. I think it was almost at 200,000. How many times have you watched it?
Those are 999,000 are me. No, I've watched it a few times, and yeah, it doesn't quite, it was kind of lightly raining on that match, but yeah, throughout, I would like to see how the rest of the matches look. So I'm even trying to find the rest of the streaming options there. But I mean, the biggest variable throughout the day of matches was the rain, like went from kind of a downpour to just lightly misting. I think there might have been an end or two where there was no rain. So it was, you know, I'd be in the green room waiting to get called out, and kind of looking out the door going, how much rain is there going to be? And like guessing where I was going to shoot my first arrow. And on one of the matches, you could tell I didn't guess right, because it was like a high seven, you know, where it had been a downpour. And then this next match, there was like no rain. And so it was like, guessed a little high. So yeah, it was definitely, I mean, we saw, you know, archery fans who watched the Olympic Games and saw those matches. I mean, you saw some scores that you shouldn't see out of Olympic archers,
yes.
Right? I mean, the venue is, it's not like it was horrible. It's just the way they set up the stadium with the seating and the, you know, the panels with the logos and stuff like that. If the wind hit things, it didn't hit them and just go in one direction. It would, you know, you would get both windsocks giving you entirely different information. So you're like, I don't know, I'm going to pick a spot to shoot and see what happens. And luckily it wasn't insanely windy for us. There was a breeze left and right. And so you kind of had to, you know, do a little guesswork there and get a reference point and sort of adjust from there, you know?
So on that last end, you shot 10.99, and the one they labeled as a 10.9 liner, but from the video, it's pretty clearly a 10. Did you know that it was a 10 when it hit?
No. Like, I think the best thing I did out there was not paying attention to the scores of arrows. Like, it's not like I had in my head, oh, I need to shoot, you know, a 9 here to win. Like, none of my matches I had that going on. I would shoot an arrow and then kind of just go into my mental, you know, sort of zone and just focus on what I wanted my next arrow to be. Like, if I shot an arrow, how could my next arrow be better than that? And, you know, whether that was changing my aim point, whether that was, you know, something physically in my form, whether that was my tempo was a little off, you know. So I would pick one thing that I could do to make my next arrow better. And I would just focus on that and sort of like focus on my aim point for my next arrow. So that way when it was, you know, and I would be visualizing a shot and I was using my opponent's clicker to actually trigger my visualized shot. I don't know if that makes sense, but right, I'm sitting there, you know, visualizing what my shot's going to look like. I hear their clicker and that's what broke the shot in my visualization. And so then I was like, boom, I saw, you know, in my mind, I saw my arrow hit the 10 ring. And then I would just open my eyes and go right into that shot that I just visualized. And a lot of times it worked out. So, I don't think I started shooting first. It was interesting because I qualified very poorly, like considering I won gold, especially. So a lot of people, in my matches gave me, the first shooting order, you know, because the higher ranked archer gets to pick which target they're on and which position, you know, if they want to shoot first or second. And I think 3 out of the 5 matches, they gave me the first shooting position, including against the Iranian archer who was, you know, seated number 1, and it came down to a 1-arrow shoot-off with him. And so during that 1-arrow shoot-off, I was shooting first, and I was just like, this is best case scenario for me, and shot a tight X. And it's, you know, as soon as I let go of it, I knew it was a 10, and then I saw it hit on the Jumbotron and it was like half an inch off the spider, and I'm like, ooh, all right, I'm good.
would you say that was the biggest arrow of the tournament, even bigger than the gold medal?
That was, you know, as soon as I did that, I was like, well, I just took that guy's bracket. You know, he was seeded number one. Not that it was going to get easier for me from there, but I had a good amount of confidence having beaten him, that I'm like, you know, this is definitely a good possibility of me taking this whole thing now. So, yeah, I don't think, you know, there's definitely things that happened there. Like, he was the only person who had a bye during the first round. So he had not shot a match when he came head to head. It was my second match. So when he came against me, he had not shot a match in the finals venue at all. So, you know, it's not like I had just shot a match. My first match was at the end of the morning session, which was at like around 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And then I didn't shoot my second match, which was against him, until, I mean, the sun was down. So it was, I don't know, 6 or 7 o'clock at night, I believe. But it was a big gap. So it's not like I was just like warmed up from shooting a match and I went right in against him. But, you know, I had a little more familiarization with the venue than he did, because he only got to shoot in it a half an hour, like a week before. I don't know. It worked out. You know, I just shot archery and they hit the center, or closer to the center.
At what point in that gold medal match after the end, like, you just needed, it was a tie, your end was a tie, but you only needed 1 point to get the win from that end. At what point did you know, hey, I just won the gold medal?
It took, like, I was, you know, because Crispin was announcing in the stadium there for us. He's not the one announcing when you watch the live stream, but so, you know, he was saying, you know, we've got to go to the judges to check that 10-9 liner. And so I'm just like looking back at my coach, MJ Rogers, and I'm like, did I get it? Like, is it in? And he's kind of looking at it like, and I think every other match, if I had a liner and I just like asked him, he would, you know, he was on it. He's like, I can't tell, or yeah, it's in, or no, it's not. And, or he's like, you know, it looks more 9 than 10. He was just kind of quiet for a little while, because I think he knew, you know, this was for the gold medal. So he didn't want to say anything and be
wrong.
Heck
no. Right.
And he's like, it's more 10 than nine. I'm like, and so I'm just sitting there. And then, you know, George Riles was agenting for me on that match. And, you know, so if there was liner calls like that, kind of when the judges would go to each target, he would kind of behind his back hold a thumbs up or a thumbs down if I got it. And so when they did that, he gave a thumbs up, and I was like, oh, like, and but I was still like, I didn't know, like, I was looking at the scoreboard at that point. Like, that was the only point I came out of sort of my zone. And so I'm like, did I just win this thing or not? I'm like, kind of. And then finally, you know, the judge announces it and holds my, you know, holds his hand out to my target. And then I was just floored. Like, it was kind of just hit me. I was sort of stunned. Like, and yeah, it was just nothing like. It's kind of a whirlwind, because from my last arrow there and them announcing that I won until it was the medal ceremony, I mean, we're talking probably less than 8 minutes. And I had to, you know, wheel down the exit ramp, go out the venue that way, right? Because they won't let you go down the entrance ramp, because that's just not going to look good for them. Even though that's the direction I had to head, right, to go get changed for the medal ceremony. So I'm, you know, I had to wheel all the way around, like, go back that way, you know, back to where I'd come from, and then get changed. And, like, as a wheelchair user, like, changing your pants after you've been, like, soaked in the rain, like, everything's drenched. I'm just, like, sopping wet, and I'm like, okay. And I'm just, like ripping my clothes off, ripping my shoes off. At MJ helping me out, I'm like, just shove my feet in these shoes and like, right. Cause you gotta be in all the fancy Nike swag that they get for you for the games and stuff. And, yeah, that was, you know, and everybody, and I've got doping control trying to, you know, get a hold of me. So they announced my, that I had been notified. Right. And so then I've got people following me around who can't leave their site.
Oh, right. So, yeah.
Yeah. So they're following me around. They're trying to get me to sign forms and stuff like that. And, you know, the World Archery guys just like, guys, do this later. Like, he's busy right now. Like, you've notified him. Like, he'll sign the form in a minute. Like, we've got to get him out on the stage. And so, you know, this is kind of, I mean, happening extremely fast, right? And
this is cool. This is the backstory. I don't know any about any of this.
Yeah.
So what happens when you win the gold medal? This is good.
So luckily Andre had won a gold medal before. And so he had told me kind of like what to expect. You know, he was my roommate in the village. And so he's like, yeah, they give you about 30 seconds to get changed.
Andre Shelby, so, that is.
Yes, Andre Shelby, the Rio gold medalist in compound. And so I was prepared. I had my, you know, they give you a backpack to put your gear in, and you know, so I had that ready, and because I knew I was gonna be, you know, when I was shooting for gold, like I was obviously going to the medal ceremony, so I was prepared for that. And you know, got dressed, got to the little, they had a little, almost like a tunnel where you would go in and line up in your order. And the volunteers kept pointing, they had a little, like a little whiteboard with these like an X mark and then like another X mark. And she's like, so when you go up on the stage, you go here, but there's three of them, like for, you know, gold, silver, and bronze. And she kept pointing to the bronze position for me. She's like, so you go here, and then they call your name, you go here. I'm like, I'm pretty sure I won the gold. Don't I go here? And she's like, you go here. And I'm like, no, I'm in the middle. Like, and then finally she's like, oh yeah, you're gold, you go here. I'm like, okay. Like, and then you know, I wheel out, go up the ramp and onto the stage. And that's when, like, right, when they're announcing everybody and everything's kind of, it was kind of, I wouldn't say eerie, but it was just, you know, no fans in the stage. So I knew everything was being streamed. So I was still under the impression that a lot of people were watching in some regard. And, you know, but kind of when that anthem starts playing, you know, you actually, I knew medals were heavy. I've held a couple of them. And, but when it's yours and you pick it up and you're like, oh, this sucker's heavy. It was, that's when everything finally started to really sink in, and that, you know, this is real. Like, I actually won this. Yeah, that's when it, you know, got a little emotional, and I was just like, yeah, absorbing the moment as much as I could.
That's so cool. What were there? I mean, you know, there's Olympics workers and TV crews and stuff. Was there, give me a sense of the size of the crowd that was there, of, you know, people who were associated with the Olympics. Are we talking a couple hundred or like 30?
Probably at the venue, there were, I would guess, around 50 volunteers or so, spread out between the warm-up area, you know, on the practice range and the finals venue and the green room. And, you know, there's people everywhere. So there's that. And then, you know, if you add the press on top of that, and, you know, like the announcing staff that was up in the booth, there was probably 50 or so, you know, media people around. So, yeah, I mean, there might have been, I don't know, 100, 150 people in that neighborhood. Like,
so it is pretty empty. I mean, for an Olympic
stadium. Yeah, for a stadium that was supposed to hold a couple thousand people, a couple hundred in there was not much at all.
Did you care?
So,
when they put that when they put that gold medal around you, did you care how many people were there?
No, it didn't. You know, I think that's how I don't know if anybody knows this, but I'm a pretty relaxed guy. But I think that's what allowed me to win it, is that I didn't care. Like, I wasn't focused on anything outside the fact of loading an arrow and shooting it. And, you know, I didn't care about the crowd. I didn't care, you know, that they were or were not there. I didn't care about much. So I was just like, you know, I'm going to shoot an arrow and I'm going to try to make my next one better than the one I just shot. And so it was a lot. I felt more pressure when my opponent like chunked one than when I had to shoot really well in order to succeed. Like, there was one point, I believe it was in the gold medal match, when it was like the first end, might have been the second, I don't know. It was earlier. And right, I'm sitting there doing my visualization and I'm waiting for his shot to break, which would be the clicker going off in my brain. And it was taking a real long time. I was just like, this is not going to go good. And I finally hear the clicker go, and it sounded like he had dry fired his bow. It was so loud and not good sounding. And I'm like, you know, shooting recurve, you can have, if you really have a poor release or big collapse or something weird, you know, the bow just doesn't make that nice, pleasant sound of shooting a well-delivered arrow. And so I'm like, well, that's not good. And then I hear him announce two. And I'm like, that's definitely not good. And so then it was like, okay, just kind of get arrows down there. Don't even like think much right now. Just pull it back and execute. And if you hit a seven, you're fine. Right. That's not what we're hoping to do, but it's trying to put, you know, things into perspective about what you need to do to get the job done. So, but it's still like that first arrow after he shot that was still like probably one of my shakiest arrows of the day. So I'd like, it's almost like the pressure came off me and it was like, I needed a little bit of that pressure to execute at the level I wanted to. So it was probably a little longer and I was like, nope, just keep expanding, let it go. Like, so yeah, it was fun experiences up there.
Well, Kevin, for the folks who may not know your story, let's run through it a little bit. We did a video with you a couple years ago called Adapt, the Kevin Mather story, which folks can check out on YouTube, but let's kind of just run through the highlights of it. Tell us how you ended up in the wheelchair. First off, you're how old now?
I'm 39 now. I had my birthday out in Tokyo, and I've got the big 4-0s around the corner here.
Man, this is a good way to start it.
Yeah. So 2009, I was training for an Ironman triathlon, and I was, you know, out on a group ride on a Friday morning. It was the Friday before the 4th of July, and so most people had that day off. We went out for, I think we were doing like a 60 or so mile ride, and since I was training, I was in like probably the best shape of my life at that point, and I would like do kind of sprint like 5 to 8 mile sort of like really hard, you know, not full on sprint, but just like high pace, you know, segments. And so I would kind of do that like 5 miles and then wait for the group to catch up. And like, you know, we'd chat with everybody and I'd pedal with them for like a half mile as I like kind of cooled down and stuff. And then I would take off again. So I was kind of doing that. And got out in front of everybody and got hit by a truck doing like 60, 65 miles an hour and, you know, essentially rear-ended while I was on a bicycle. and, you know, flew up over the top of his truck and all that stuff. And that's how I got injured. It was, pretty much shattered my spine, spinal cord injury. And I was paralyzed that day, and, no regain of any function since then. And, was in the ICU for like 8 or 10 days. And then, so that was July 3rd. I did rehab after the ICU until like the middle of September, figuring out how to be a wheelchair user, figuring out, how to transfer onto a bed, how to get into a car, like how to do wheelies and go up and down curbs and all these things that will at least help you be successful as you, venture on your life as a paraplegic now. That was 2009. It was probably a year or so of like learning how to function and be able to get back to work and get back to just trying to live life. In 2011, like near the end of 2011, one of my friends who was on the bike ride where I got injured, he kind of challenged me. He happened to have a friend who was also a paraplegic, and so he was, who had competed in Ironman World Champs at Kona a few years back. And so my buddy Steve challenged me to be the next Ironman world champion. So at the point when he said it, I was only, 2 years out from my injury. I'd started riding a bike and stuff like that, but I wasn't in any remarkable shape. And, his words kind of just hit me and sunk in. It probably took a week or so for me to even get that twinge of like, maybe I could do that. So I just went out on a bike ride and saw if I could ride 100 miles and what that would feel like. And I did it. I just kind of did laps around our town. Like, we had a good bike trail system and I could do 20 miles. So I just rode 20 miles this way, 20 miles back, 20 miles, until I did 100 miles. And I was like, that wasn't the worst thing I've ever done. So maybe I could do this, especially with training and stuff like that. Like with at that point, I think I had right around a year for the 2012 Ironman World Champs. And so I just started training and went and qualified for it in Lubbock, Texas. I did a half Ironman there. I came in second place there, earning my slot to the Ironman World Championships. And then, in October of 2012, went out to Kona and, competed in the Ironman World Champs. And that was the most grueling physical endeavor I have thus far taken part of. And hopefully the most grueling thing I ever do, because I don't think I want to do that again.
What were the distances of the disciplines?
So it was a 2.4 mile open water swim in the sort of Kona. It's not necessarily a bay, it's, harbor thing, but we had a big surf day. There was, probably 5-6 foot rollers coming through while we're swimming through that. And then 112 mile bike and then a full marathon to wrap things up at the end there. So 26.2 mile run, which is for the bike, I do it in a hand cycle, which has, gears and all that. And I'm kind of almost laying down in a very recumbent position and then cranking with my arms. And then for the run, I'm in what we call a race chair. That is, so no gears, you're just pushing the wheels, but it's, if you've seen like the Los Angeles Marathon or something like that with some wheelchair racers, it's two wheels in the back and then one wheel like way out in front of you, probably, I think my wheelchair is 72 inches long, so it's very stable and easier to steer, and you can, you know, get up to higher speeds and not feel really sketchy.
But pushing those wheels just after you pedaled 112 miles with your arms, the same arms.
Yeah, same arms. I didn't get to change arms in between. Keeping nutrition in your body to be able to accomplish that is one of the biggest feats of the day, like remembering to eat when you need to eat and all, you know, it's pretty, I did it in 12 hours and 32 minutes right around that neighborhood. And when I came off the bike, I was like on track to do it right around 10 hours and 40 minutes. And I just blew up on the run. I, you know, had like no energy. I had not eaten perfectly on the bike, and I felt great coming off the bike. And then when I hit the first hill in my race chair, I was like, oh, this is not good. And so, yeah, there's video of me out there practically dying, pushing up the larger hill of the course. And, you know, a hill that should have taken me 10 minutes probably took me 45. So that's when the goals changed to finishing. You know, I wanted to finish under 11 hours. I was like, I just want to finish at all. Like,
that's amazing.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun, though.
So then fast forward to 2017, you get into archery, decide to take up archery.
Yeah. And so there's a, I'll give you guys the full story now, but, I had actually started shooting, my buddy invited me, and I cleared this up because he sent me the picture of me shooting my first, arrows. And, I was like, John, when was that picture? And he's like, I believe, sometime like February or something like that of 2015. And then, so I had shot like for maybe a month or something like that. And then I stayed at a friend's house in Denver, and I was taking the train back to Aspen where I lived. And I was a little late to get to the train. So I was coming out of their house on their porch, and there was like three stairs I had to go down, and they're like a little wider stairs, so I could do a wheelie and just kind of bump my way down the stairs. When I bumped my way off the first one, I kind of went a little too fast and had momentum. And so my chair just kept going, and my finger was stuck. This finger, my left middle finger, was stuck between my push rim and my wheel, and the wheel just kept going. And so it like broke and dislocated this finger. Like you could see, it's still kind of
got a nice bump there. Yeah.
So I was done shooting archery, you know, as a left-handed archer. I couldn't pull back a bow. It hurt way too much. So I was like, well, I guess I'm not, I didn't have dreams of being a Paralympic archer or anything at that moment. I was just playing around with it. Right. But I was like, I couldn't even do that anymore. So it wasn't until 2017 where I was driving, and my hand surgeon was like, you need to always be stretching and flexing that thing. So I would be like at stoplights, I'm sitting here like flexing it like this, and then like straightening it out. And then I remember like clear as day, I was at a stoplight and I was flexing it, and like the knuckle pops, like, you know, like a normal good, you know, knuckle crack. And I was like, ooh, I'm like, maybe it's better enough where I could try shooting archery again. And so that was in 2017. And then I was like, kind of started shooting, and then got really, you know, that was probably April or so of 2017. And then I, you know, when I was able to shoot, I was like, oh, maybe I should get a coach and actually learn how to shoot properly. And then sort of fell in love with the sport and was addicted, you know, to shooting higher scores and all, you know, all the things us archers do.
Well, explain some of the intricacies of shooting, because I think you shoot a 72-inch bow or 70-inch recurve.
Yep.
But the intricacies of doing that with a wheelchair, because normally, you know, a person be standing up and they can lean out, you know, to get the limbs away from their body, but you got to kind of work it around your chair.
Yeah, absolutely. So a big, you know, problem for a lot of archers in wheelchairs with shooting recurve is the string angle and contacting the front wheel, you know, that they're shooting over. The spring will often contact that wheel or push rim. So when I first started shooting, I was just shooting in what we call like my everyday wheelchair. Like it's just whatever, my normal wheelchair. And I was having to maintain balance. I was having to kind of slump down, like sort of scoot my butt forward on the seat an inch or two. So then I'd be like leaning back more into my backrest and then shooting like that. And for me, I was, especially if I was shooting indoors, right? Because you're aiming lower, my string would contact my wheel. And then I would also get chest contacts because of that position. And so I didn't know the rules of archery because, I was brand new to it. So I started looking up the rules and I hadn't been classified yet. So classification is another thing, right? As a para archer, you get classified. Like you can't just show up and be like, yeah, I'm injured. I'm disabled, guys. Can I shoot para archery? Like there's a process. You have to submit some medical documents. You have to get documentation from a doctor. And, you know, this is your injury or disability. And you have to go down sort of a path. You have somebody examine you and evaluate your level of disability. Like for me, like people with paraplegia, like there's levels, right? Often people just think, oh, your legs don't work. But my level of sensation is like just below my pec muscles. So it's like I have zero abdominal muscles to help balance and all that stuff. So that's why I'm allowed to use, you'll see I shoot with a strap that goes around like almost not quite my chest, but around my upper stomach. And so, right, I had to learn those rules. And then like I built a chair to shoot out of that I thought would be the best. And again, I hadn't been to any national events, let alone international events. So, you know, normally you would go and see other people and sort of imitate what they were doing. But I had no clue. And I guess I could have looked up stuff online and saw pictures of people and what works best. But I just took the bucket from my mono ski because I was on the ski team at that point. And mounted it to a wheelchair. And because the bucket provides great stability, I mean, trying to maneuver a mono ski, like while you're skiing at, you know, 60 plus miles an hour, like you want to be pretty stable and able to control that thing. So, so I mounted this to a wheelchair and was like, that's pretty good. Like I felt way better support. And I was able to, you know, and then I put the strap across my chest and I was like, now I'm locked in and I can actually sit upright and have a better, you know, form. And that allowed me to get the spring off my chest. And then, yeah, my spring was no longer hitting the wheel. When I first started shooting, I was shooting a 68-inch bow and I have, you know, a 31 inch draw length, you know, 30 and a half to 31. And so like, that's pretty long for shooting a medium bow. So, you know, being able to get that clearance and get back to a 70 inch bow, really helped things out. And, I really prefer the string angle also on my face, like a 68 inch bow. It was always like kind of here and I was wanting to like anchor and then anchor again. So now I still like have a slight head dip to get the string on my nose. Because another thing, shooting from a wheelchair, so you shooting at a target at 70 meters, you know, although your bow is elevated, you know, to get the angle, you know, needed, you are looking down onto the target, unless you're really short. But, right, for me, my eye is almost dead center of the 10 ring. You know, if I roll up to a target that is at official height, you know, that's my eye level's there. So I'm looking straight at the target where most archers are looking down slightly. And so they have a little, you know, a natural, like anchor there on their face because they, it's almost like I have to look down at the 2 ring and then look up at the 10 with my eyes. But yeah, all the different intricate things.
Yeah, so you're progressing through archery. You know, we start seeing you at all these national tournaments and stuff. At what point are you thinking Paralympics?
So my first U.S. archery event I shot was World Champs Trials in 2017 to go to World Champs in Beijing. And we shot those fairly late. I want to say we shot those in June, the end of June, or maybe early July. And the whole reason I was going to that was they had an international classification. That wasn't true. They had a national classification there. And so I was like, oh, I can go get classified. I'll shoot this event. And my coach I was working with at that point was like, well, if you're going to this, we might as well get you like shooting the best you possibly can so you can make the team. I'm like, I'm not making the team. And he's like, oh, you don't think so? I'm like with the scores I was shooting, I think I had shot an event, you know, just a local Starfita thing here in Colorado. And I still have the scorecard on my fridge. I shot a 414.
So out of 720.
Like, yeah, out of 720. There's a lot of room for improvement there. So I shot that and I'm like, I'm not making the team. You're like fooling yourself here. And he's like, all right. And I don't know, that might have been at the end of May or June, like, or beginning of June when I shot that score. I'm like, I've got to increase a lot of points here. But you know, we were figuring out a lot of stuff. That was still when I was shooting off my chest and all that stuff. So as like, once I got the string off my chest and my chair, like my score jumped up pretty quick. So I went to trials and my coach, he was like, well, if you make the team, will you stop ski racing? Like, would that be a good enough indicator? Cause he really wanted me to just shoot archery. And I had plans of continuing doing both sports. And I was like, sure, if I make the world team, I'll stop ski racing. And then I went out Salt Lake City, right? I got classified and they said, yes, you are in fact disabled. And I forget if we did that in one day or two, but it was, you know, a qualifier and then round robins. And I took third place there, which, you know, it was, I believe Mike Lukow was the first place qualifier, then Tim Palumbo, and then myself. And I was actually talking to Eric Bennett, and I'm like, it's your fault that I'm here, because he took that year off. And if he had decided to shoot, like, there's no way I would have beat him. And so I was like, you're the reason I'm like fully in archery, because if he would have been there, I would have at least still ski raced for a year. And then, right. So I made that team and we went out, to Beijing in September. August, September, something like that. And I didn't do that awesome individually, but for the team rounds, I was able to put a couple 2-arrow ends together, and we worked our way to the gold medal match and ended up taking silver there. So I was pretty amped about archery at that point, you know, knowing that I could. What's that?
It's a good start. What a start.
Yeah.
Silver, you know, at the world championships.
Yeah, it was pretty, you know, if we took that gold there, that would have been amazing. It was still amazing to get silver. But, you know, at that point, that was the best that Michael and Timothy had done at, I think at any international event. I could be wrong about that, but definitely at world champs, you know, silver. And so I was sitting there and I'm like, yeah, guys, this is the best I've ever done at an international event. Just like, oh, shut up. and so, yeah, you know, I did that and was kind of addicted. That's when I, you know, got open the Lancaster archery catalog and just started going crazy. What sort of toys do I need to make my score go higher?
That's good to see. Even on the para side, you have that thought. It's got to be the equipment. I need just better equipment.
Absolutely. I mean, I could out a lot of archers in what they did at the Paralympic Games. But we'll let them give you those stories. But yeah, it's, you know, equipment's important to a certain extent. And I'm a big fan of worrying about both sides of the equation. You know, when I was a ski racer, I trained a lot. You know, I would put in my own time to be on the hill. You know, snow kind of goes away and resorts close in April out here in Colorado. And I would go out to California, you know, at Mammoth Mountain, which stays open generally through the 4th of July, sometimes later. So I would ski out there, you know, the end of April, May and June, and, you know, hopefully into July. And then we would do camps with the team at Mount Hood. And so I was always just putting in as much effort as I could to make myself better. But I also, you know, was in the tune room, you know, several times a week, tuning my skis, keeping them, you know, waxed well, and, you know, making sure, you know, fiddling with my mono ski, my suspension. Like, you got to have both be really good to execute well, right? As an archery, like, I could be an amazing archer, and if the tune on my bow is out to lunch, like, it's probably not going to go well. And, you know, even if I've got a bow that's hitting decently, well, if I can make it better, I'm going to put that effort in to make it better. So, you know, I see people, you know, put in sort of 3/4 the effort, and then they wonder why they don't perform at the top of the pyramid, you know, and like, because it takes everything. It's not, you know, you can't give it 90%. That's not going to win.
So 2017, you start competing. 2021, Paralympic gold medalist. How does that reconcile in your mind? I mean, that seems like.
I mean, for me, I expected it. So I wasn't. I gave myself. I plan on at least shooting through the Los Angeles Games. And so I gave myself 3 shots at a gold medal. That's one of my goals, right? It's in my performance journal that I keep. It's like, yeah, Paralympic gold medal. And I was like, yeah, of course I can win this. And so, I mean, the fact that I did it on my first try, I'm stoked with. Like, it's a little, the fact that I qualified 17th and then won it, that's what really blew me away.
Right.
So it's not like I knew I was going to win gold, but I knew, I mean, I had spent a lot of time out at the training center in Chula Vista this year. And I mean, I was shooting really well. Like, my qualifying at Tokyo was not reflective of my shooting. And so even when I saw that score, it didn't crush me. You know, there was that day was good and breezy, and so things were left and right, and you know, there was a lot of just like mismanaged like aim points for aiming off, and you know, it was a tricky field, and I was almost directly in the center of it. It was kind of like this venue that they had walled off. And so the people down on the right side of the field who were up against one of the walls, like they had like half the wind challenge, you know, and it, like, I'm not using that as an excuse, but it was just the fact.
It's a fact. Yeah. Right.
And so I'm like, I had to, like, big deal. Like at the end of the day, like, I mean, I didn't do the math on it, but I shot like an 8 point something arrow average and they shot like a 9.1, you know, I shot like an 8.8 something and they shot like a 9.1 something. And so I'm like, if you average that out, like, and I performed very well under pressure. So it didn't matter to me. I'm like, I can grab points, you know, during matches, it'll be fine. And so, yeah, but I don't know. It's sinking in kind of crazy. You know, I came home and my neighbors had made this big sign of me and put it on my lawn and stuff. And I'm like, that's pretty cool. And, you know, I'm still, you know, I haven't started shooting yet, but you know, I've been out doing yard work and stuff and people honking and waving as they're driving by and all that fun stuff. So
yeah. What's the publicity been like? I saw you doing interviews, I guess, right afterwards. You had like a white USA mask on. So I'm guessing there's been a lot of that.
So after the medal ceremony, then you go into like the sort of press alley, and they had at least three different booths with different press people. And, you know, with multiple people, you know, somebody starts asking questions and then like three or four other people just kind of come around you with voice recorders, you know, and they're like, and then they start piling on the questions. And the, you know, the one guy's like, hey, this is my interview. Why don't you calm down?
So you're just, they're fighting over you.
Kind of like trying to talk and, you know, give insight to what they're asking in a way that doesn't make you sound dumb. Like, right. I'm like, great. This is my 5 minutes to try to not sound stupid. So, you know, and I was kind of still just shocked with what had just happened. Like, right, it just come off the podium and I'm like, this is insane. And, right, that's still going on. And I still got the doping control guy, like, wanting me to give him a urine sample. And so it's just like, okay. And this is all at like, I don't know, 10, 11 o'clock at night. So, so yeah, the press has been good. The NBC network where I grew up back in Los Angeles, they did a spot on me. I think that aired on Friday. And, you know, before the games, where I live now in Colorado, NBC did a spot on me, you know, heading out there. So, yeah, things have been great. I mean, here I am on the CAM podcast, so that's awesome. And, you know, I'm still just stoked about archery. Like, I'm, you know, people are like, what are you doing now? You know, you won a gold medal. I'm like, well, I'm getting my hunting bow tuned so I can go on a nice hunt or two. I've got an elk tag here in Colorado, and then I've got hopefully a monster whitetail hunt up in Canada in about 3 weeks. So I'm hoping it doesn't get too cold too quick this year. It's mostly what I'm hoping.
How about competition wise? What does the next year look like?
I was talking about this with Eric Bennett, you know, my teammate, and I'm like, we are busy. We have on the para side of things, right? Our world champs, because it was so close to when the games was, because the Paralympics is a little later. And then, right, our world champs was supposed to be in 21, but since they postponed the games to 21, now it was like not quite overlapping, but it would have been tight. And so they just pushed back our world champs to February, which is probably one of the most awkward times for an outdoor world championship in archery. But it's in Dubai. So it's, the weather is going to be gorgeous. So we shoot there the end of February. So my schedule for competition looks like, so Sunday I have Colorado State Championships, this coming Sunday, and then I'm kind of off until,
So that'll be your first tournament since the Olympics.
Correct. So
that's gotta be a cool reception.
I haven't shot my bow yet. I'm planning on it today, but, yeah, hopefully everything still works out. If I lose my state championship being the Paralympic gold medalist, I won't be stoked with that. I think it was last year, might have been 2 years ago, but my coach's son, who had shot a lot, he went to Emmanuel, and so he shot through college, and he was pretty good archer. He had decided to shoot Colorado States, and he qualified like 60, 70 points below me or something like that. And then during his matches, he was shooting not awesome scores. You know, he was shooting like 23s and 24s and stuff like that. And I'm like, this is fine. I just keep shooting my shot and everything should work out. So we came down to the gold medal match for state champs. And his first end, he dunks a 30 on me. And I'm just like, you haven't shot a 10 in any of your other matches. He's like, well, yeah, I was saving them for you. And I'm like, oh, I hate you so much right now. And I think that's one of the tightest matches I've ever shot in my life. It was like, he shot a 30 and then he shot like a 28 and I shot a 29. And it was like, all this for somebody who, you know, who qualified way low, you know, not like 20 points low, like 70 points low. And then, hadn't shot above a 25. And then now he's dunking 29s and 30s on. So
who won?
I won.
I
won. but it was matches like that. Like, right. Anybody who asked me about how they can get better at competing, how they can get better at archery, right? I don't hide anything from anybody. It's not like I have these voodoo secrets that I do and that's how I became a good archer. Like, I compete as often as I can. So if there's a Star Fita within 100 miles, I'm going to go to it. Like, and so because it's cases just like that, right? It's like Colorado State champs, there might have been 6 or 7 recurver men, you know, in the recurve division shooting. And I was shooting as a senior for that. And I'm like, that instance for that gold medal match was more pressure. And like, I had to keep my head together because, like, right, when he punches you in the mouth with a 30 on the opener, you're just like, that's not supposed to happen. And I just had to keep shooting good arrows. Like, if I would have gotten like in my head and like, oh, what's he doing here? And like, how is this happening to me? And this really is horrible. Like, I could have started shooting bad arrows, but I just focused on my shot process. I'm like, I'm just going to keep shooting the best arrows I know how to shoot. And whatever is going to happen is going to happen. Like, you know, that's how I like to look at competing, is like the person on the other side is not my competitor. Like, I'm just shooting. I want to shoot the best archer I can. And then whatever happens, happens. So I have states, and then I'll finally get a break. And that's when I am, hopefully I'll get a hunt in. I've got an elk hunt here and all that. And then so after the hunting season's kind of done for me, then I'll be tinkering with stuff all along the way, but switching to sort of that mindset, looking at, we'll see what events happen next year. or even, I guess, this year, if things happen in, you know, November, December. But I'm already registered for Lancaster. So, I've got my hotel there and all that, at least. And so I'll be, you know, as long as that goes this year, I'll be at the Lancaster Classic. I'm not sure which bow I'm going to shoot there yet, though. I'm considering going to the Barebow Nation for the Lancaster Classic.
Oh, man. Wow.
Don't
that
tell
place,
anybody, though.
That it's place will go wild. Kevin Mather, yeah. John Demmer final. How cool would that be?
Oh, it would be, that would be phenomenal. I want to take all the credit because I actually helped, Matt Yakka tune his bow before he headed out to Nationals. And, yeah, he was actually over while NBC was filming me shooting and stuff for the reel they did before I went to the games. And, it was, you know, he showed up and I'm like, and your bow's as tuned as you can get it, right? He's like, yeah, it's good. Like, I put it in my bow vise and just looked at the limb alignment. And I'm like, what do they teach you guys in the Barebow world? He's like, oh, shut up.
Are they allowed to tune bows in Barebow? I don't know. I think they like to have them
either.
Out of tune.
As long as it's the weirdest thing you can get, yes. Then that's what's the best thing is.
That's Barebow.
I'm like, you know, it's okay to shoot good stuff, right?
No. You go out and find a rock for your weight, you know, something
yeah,
you could do like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. So if I am going to switch to the Barebow class for Lancaster, I'll have to get a new wardrobe and get some new equipment and try to shoot my arrows backwards and something of that nature. But, I really love the Barebow crowd. They're a bunch of fun to hang out with. I had Demmer and Stonebreaker and some other Barebow guys on the target behind me 2 years ago at the NFA Roundup. And so, you know, I got to be near those guys and hang out with them and have a lot of fun. So
you'd fit in there. Cool. You definitely fit in with that crowd. they like to have a good time and you always have a good time out there.
I do. It's more about the fun than anything else. Winning is a lot of fun though. So, Lancaster, like I can get 27s to fly out of my bow pretty good. So if I can get a big heavy arrow where I don't have to crawl much, I don't think it would be a bad idea. I'm not totally 100% going that way yet, but it's an idea. Yeah. And then I'll shoot Vegas. And this year it's tight. It's like Lancaster. I don't even know if I'll come home. I might just spend an extra day in Lancaster and shoot at the shop there and then go straight to Vegas. Shoot Vegas. And then I don't think we have a week or so until the para team will leave for world champs in Dubai. So, luckily I have enough bows where I can have indoor setups and outdoor setups and I don't have to take everything apart and start over. So I just thought of another story, but that's sort of the plan. And then right into the USAT series next year will be, all the para world champ team will have a little leg up there because we'll have shot, you know, a 70 meter tournament, like a very important one right before Arizona Cup. Come in Arizona Cup and then just hit the ground running. And, I don't even know what the international besides Dubai looks like for next year. So as 23, we'll have the Pan American Games and another world championships. And those both will be quota slots to earn positions for our country to go to Paris. So it's like we have 22, 23, 24, we have major archery events. So it's gonna be important archery all through these years. I'm
full
like
steam
hopefully
ahead.
All that goes that way. And then 25, right? Hopefully we'll have no majors. Like, hope, you know, 25, we're not supposed to have a world champs. Oh, no, we would have a world champs. Darn it. I want a year where I can just take off and not have to worry about anything important.
Well, the next Olympics now with the shift, is it still on track for 24 or does that shift back to 25?
No, it should be 24.
24,
Paris,
okay.
Should go 24.
Gotcha, okay.
As long, I mean, who knows what happens with, you know, Corona and all that's going on, but at least for right now, it's 24. But yeah, so another, I'm hoping these pictures come out somewhere. I don't know who took these pictures, but. So I had shot my first match, so say 1 p.m. I went into, they had this really nice facility at the venue, like sort of lobby, waiting area, hangout space, you know, locker room. And so I had brought like a Therm-a-Rest camp pad, and I was just laid out on that, just hanging out, chilling in the AC. For us, it wasn't that hot, though, because winter decided to show up to Japan halfway through our trip there, and it went from 95 degrees and about 90% humidity to literally the next day it was like 68 degrees and just raining. So I was laying out relaxing, just kind of I was playing online chess, and then about an hour and a half before my next match, I was like, okay, I'm gonna get up and, you know, get a snack in me and head out to the range and start shooting. I was shooting, you know, they had like probably like 50 plus targets out, but they had six separate targets where it was like your warm-up lane before your match. That was like right next to the entrance to the match venue. And so I was out shooting on like outside of that area, but still on the warm-up field. And I shoot my last end and I'm kind of like, oh, they're going to call me over to the like close warm-up venue, right? Where they want an eye on you. So they make sure you're going to be on time for your match. And so I start to head over there and I have my bow. I kind of put my limb tip of my lower limb in my shoe. And then with the stabilizer, the front rod under my left armpit is how I wheel around with my own bow. And I kind of look down at my top nock. And I noticed that I had like frayed the nock point. And I was like, well, that's not good. And I kind of like just went to pick at it a little bit to see how bad it was. If it was just like a little fuzzy piece or if it was in fact damaged.
Yeah.
And it just came off. And I'm like, that's really not good.
Oh, and man.
I had a backup bow, you know, of course, but I was like, that bow was hammering and I had the most amount of confidence with that bow at that point. And so, you know, I looked at MJ and I go, MJ, you need to run to my locker and grab the spool of red serving that's on this shelf and get back here as soon as you can. And, you know, at that point, they were informing me that I needed to be over at the shooting warm-up section of the field for my match. And I'm like, okay. So I knew I had maybe like 15, 20 minutes. And so MJ runs, goes and grabs that. Like I, you know, take the rest of the damaged knock point off and get that ready. He comes back and it's dark. I mean, it's like, I don't know, whatever it was, 7, 8 o'clock at night. And so I've got MJ and George Riles like holding their phones up with their lights on, giving me light to tie this new knock point. And, you know, the way I tie my knock points is I serve them on. So I, you know, an overhand knot and then I serve and then I back serve to finish it.
Yeah.
And, but I start it a little tight and then I smush it with like a bow square to smush it to the place I want. So oftentimes I don't get it perfect on the first attempt, right? I'll smush it and I either tied it too close and it's like I can't get the arrow knock in there, or like I tied it a little far and like I smush it up and then I've got a little gap and my arrow wiggles, and I'm very particular. I don't like no arrow wiggle. So like luckily on this one I hit it, you know, perfect. And I'm like, all right, that looks good. I'm going to go shoot. I thought I had time to shoot an end to warm, you know, to check that bow and to warm up. And as I'm wheeling over to my target in the specific warm-up venue, they're like, okay, USA, time to go. And I'm like, uh-oh. And so if I don't know if the, again, I haven't seen the footage, but if they show it when they, so I wheel out and they announce my competitor and they announce me and we wave and I go to the shooting line and get ready. And then MJ has both of my bows and then he brings out my, the, what was my backup bow. And I'm like, no, the black bow. And he like just looks at me. He's like, you mean that one you just tied the knock on? I was like, yeah, it'll be good. And so then,
with no practice on it. So you don't know what's going to happen.
So then the judge comes over and I'm tying my finger sling on and I knock, you know, well, I don't knock an arrow yet, but she's like, are you ready? And I'm like, yeah. And then it kind of sinks in. It's like, sometimes that first or second arrow coming out of a bow after I tie a knock point on is not the most awesome arrow. And I'm like, well, this is happening now. So good thing it's a set system. And yeah, I shot it. I forget what that first arrow out of it hit, but it wasn't that bad because that was, so that was the match going against the number one seeded guy.
Oh, okay.
So it worked out.
So it worked out in the end. Yeah.
Yeah, but there was, so when I was doing all that, people came around and were getting, you know, some of the press guys were getting pictures of me, you know, tying my knock and all that stuff. So I'm just super stoked that this happened. I'm, you know, there's a lot of people involved in this industry and this sport that I have to thank and, you know, give credit. And I don't know them all is part of the problem. I've had so many people along the journey either influence me or help me or, you know, sort of coach me, give me advice to get me on the track that I wanted to be on. And, you know, the archery community is so amazing. You know, again, I've only been here since 2017 and I already feel like I've been a part of this family for a long time. So, yeah, I hope I've made everybody proud by, you know, going out to Tokyo and getting gold. And yeah, I'm looking forward to helping the next guy out. You know, I'm always around and, you know, people message me and, you know, I'm trying to give back, you know, trying to be, you know, part of that sort of leadership on the sport to where it's like, yeah, we all help each other out and we all, you know, want to advance the sport, advance shooting, make everybody better. So,
I know it's always a good day whenever we see the guy with the targets on his wheels and the red hair go up to the line there to shoot. Then, you know, all right, here we go. Kevin's here.
We're always going to have fun at least.
All right, folks, that is another episode of the Competition Archery Media Podcast. We certainly thank our guest, Kevin Mather. Kevin, thanks for being here today.
Oh, thank you so much, PJ. It's an honor, and I appreciate the invitation to be here. And, yeah, everybody go out, shoot some archery, have some fun, and maybe get yourself a nice deer or elk this fall.
Sounds good, folks. The Competition Archery Media Podcast is available wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Thanks for joining us today.